Okay, today's daf is Baba Basra daf Nun Beis. We are holding on the bottom of daf Nun Aleph Amud Beis. We are at the two dots at Tanu Rabbanan. The Gemara is going to discuss how a person should not accept a pikadon from somebody who you suspect might have stolen that pikadon. It's just not a thing that you want to get involved with. But the Gemara is also going to discuss if you have already accepted a pikadon from a person who may have stolen that pikadon, who do you give it back to? You don't know for sure that they stole it, so we're going to discuss a number of people who are generally suspected of maybe having stolen it, and who do you give it back to when you give back the pikadon. And then the Gemara is going to discuss how a father and a son, while the Mishnah had said that they don't have a chazakah on each other's nechasim, maybe once the son is no longer supported by the father, things change, and then they can develop a chazakah on each other's nechasim. Then the Gemara is going to discuss what if you have a number of brothers who are sharing their father's estate, and one of the brothers is in charge of the entire estate, and all of a sudden there are certain shtaros that come to light that have that brother's name on it, that he's owed money, that something was sold to him. Do we assume that those are personal items, that he personally is owed money, or is it him as the caretaker of the estate that's owed the money? So we're going to have a machlokas, Rav and Shmuel, how do we view such shtaros? Do we view them as personal, or do we view them as belonging to the estate? Who has to prove, does he have to prove that they're personal, do the other brothers have to prove that they're not personal? And we're going to have two situations where even Rav would agree that the other brothers need to bring the raya, even though Rav generally holds the guy himself, the caretaker himself, would have to bring the raya. And then in Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to give a final psak of Rav Nachman on this issue of whether the caretaker of the estate has to prove that the shtaros are personal, and that in fact will be the psak of Rav Nachman, that it's his job to prove that those shtaros are personal. And then toward the end of Amud Beis, the Gemara is going to open up a discussion of the other kind of chazakah, not a cheskas gimel shanim, but the chazakah of a kinyan chazakah. How does one acquire karka? By na'al, gadar, parat, doing something in the karka for a moment that shows a sense of bailus, that's a form of kinyan, and what the conditions are for such a kinyan to be effective. So let's begin. Tanu Rabbanan, five lines from the bottom. Nun Aleph Amud Beis. Tanu Rabbanan. Ein mekavim piktonos lo min anashim v'lo min avadim v'lo min atinokos. It is not a good idea for a person to accept a pikadon from married women, from avadim, or from children, because we assume that those pikdonos might have been stolen. That the woman may have taken them from her husband, the avadim may have taken them from the masters, the tinokos may have taken them, well, that one is not as clear. The tinokos may have taken them from whoever it is that they are that they're staying by. That they, I think the Rashbam writes this, Rashbam writes, Lomen anashim dikel emeimer ganvum lebaleim ludan la'adoneim v'tinokos nami shema ganvum mi base balabayis shem dorim shan. The tinokos may have taken it from the house of the person who is hosting them. And it's usher to help out people who are doing an avera. Clearly they're giving you this pikadon because they're trying to hide it from the rightful owner. You're not allowed to help them hide it, and therefore if you don't take it from them, they're going to have no choice but to return it. They're going to be afraid of being caught with it, so that's a way of avoiding helping out people who are over avera. But what if you did it? What if you accepted such a pikadon? Kibel mini isha, yachzir li isha. If you did accept the pikadon from a woman, you don't know that she stole it, so you give it back to her. V'imesa, yachzir li baila. Unless she's no longer alive. If she's no longer alive, you give it to her husband. Kibel mina eved. If you did accept the pikadon from an eved, yachzir li eved. Again, you don't know that he stole it, so you give it back to the eved. V'imes, and if the eved dies, yachzir li rabbo. Then you give it back to his master. The Rashbam explains that mistama kol mashik kana eved, kana rabo, and therefore, even if you don't know that the eved stole this, and it may have belonged to him, but whatever belonged to him belonged to his master as well. Problem is, the Rashba asks the question, if that's the case, that what we're relying on and what we're assuming is kol mashakana eved kana rabo, that's not only liachar misaso, that's even while he's alive. The eved says, I'm kona something, automatically it goes to the owner, unless it goes to the master, unless the person who's makneh to the eved gave it al manas shein lebalich rishuspa, that al manas, that the adon has no rishus in it. So how can we rely on kamash kan eved kan rabba? What changes after the eved dies that didn't exist before the eved dies? So that's why the Rashba and Rabbeinu Yonah explain a little bit differently, that even though while the eved is alive, we give it to the eved because we assume that it's possible that it was a pikadon that the eved rightfully had, and therefore misafik, you give it to where you got it from. That's because the money is becheskas ha'eved, that he's the mafkid. But once the eved dies and he doesn't have a chazaka anymore, so then you give it back to the master, because that's the second possibility of who it might belong to, that it might belong to the master, because typically you don't find the chasim in the hands of the eved. Typically, they all belong to the master. So since there's no one else that's muchzuk, so the default position is therefore to give it to the master. Says the Gemara further on the top of Nun Beis Amud Aleph, Kibel min ha-katan, if you receive from the katan, you receive the pikadon, for you accepted the pikadon from the katan, which again you should not have done, but if you did it, yasalo segula. So what you do is, you don't give it back to the katan, he cannot be trusted with money, you don't know what he's going to do with it, so you make what's called a segula. The Gemara is going to discuss what that means, but you put it in some very safe place where it's going to be beneficial to him, but it's not going to be something that he's going to have control over where he can lose it. Mace, and if the katan dies, yachzil yorshav, then you return the pikadon that you received to the yorshim of the katan. V'kulan sha'amru b'shas misasan, but if any of these people, the isha, the eved, the katan, if they say at the time of their death, shel ploni hein, they identify who it belongs to, and it's not the husband, the master, the balabayas who's hosting the katan. It's none of those people. It's some other party. Ya'asa kiperushan. You do exactly what they tell you. If they tell you it belongs to somebody else, so you give it to the person who they say that it belongs to. So a woman is nemenes b'shas misasa to say that the money that she has given you as a pikadon belongs to somebody else other than her husband. Why she's believed is a machlokas Rishonim. Some of the Rishonim suggest, the Rabbeinu Yonah, the Rashba, the Ritva, suggest that this is a raya to the Shita of Rabbeinu Yonah, that an Isha is nemenes to say on any Nechasim that she has in her control that they belong to her, and that her husband has no rights to them, even for the peros. So therefore, if she's believed to say that they're hers and they don't belong to her husband, so it's well understood that she's believed to say that they belong to Ploni, that they belong to some third party who we have no idea who he is, because she could say that they belong to her. That is the Shita of Rabbeinu Yonah. However, the Ramban disagrees. The Ramban suggests that really a woman is not believed to say that the chasin that are muhsak biyada do not belong to her husband at all. The reason she's nemenes over here is based on what the Yerushalmi says in the 9th parak of Baba Kama, that ein adam asu l'shaker b'shas misa, that it's unusual for a person to lie at the time of their death. So since this is dafka, at the time of the person's death, at the time of the woman's death, that she's sharing this information, so we're more prone to believe that which she says at the time of her death. Now the other Rishonim that said that a woman is nemenes to say that the nechasim don't belong to her husband at all would say that the idea that we're saying over here, that she says this at the time of her death, is really lav dafka. It doesn't have to be at the time of her death, it could be at any time. She just says automatically nemenes. It's just that's the normal time where you would normally start explaining where all the money in your possession belongs and who it belongs to. It's that's the typical situation where you do that. You want to get your affairs in order, make sure there's no confusion that after you die. But that's the Machlokas Rishonim that has ramifications in terms of how we understand this idea that they're saying Bishas Misasan. Is Bishas Misasan Dafka, or is Bishas Misasan Lav Dafka? Okay, but back in the Gemara, so we had said that if at the time of their death they say exactly who it belongs to, so listen to them. You give it exactly to who they tell you to give it to. V'im Lav, but if they don't give any specific instructions, so then what do you do? Yasa Perush LePerushan. you need to make a perush on their perush. What does that mean? Says the Rashbam, Vim lav yasa perush l'perushin, kolomar vim lo mehemin, leu nivkat shebikadon shalosa plonihu, ela shal baylim shalemu, umitav bushein, and rotzim lomar shul shal baylim, dolos chasku kigazlanim, veganavim, yasa nivkat perush achar l'perusho, shiachsul baylim shalelev lo losa ploni. Rashbam says, first pshat, what it means is, vim lav doesn't mean if they didn't tell you who it belongs to. It means that they did tell you it belongs to, but you don't believe them. You think that they're lying. You think that they don't want to, that really it does belong to their husband or master, and they don't want to say it because then you're going to know that they're ganavim, that they had stolen it from their husband and the master. If you see through that that statement and you realize that they're lying, so then give it back to the husband, give it back to the master. Don't listen to the words that they're saying. Try to figure out what the actual truth is. And the Rashbam's raya that this pshat in the Gemara is correct is the story that's going to follow in the next line of the Gemara. However, the Rashbam says that's not the only pshat of this line of the Gemara. V'yesh mefarshim v'imla v'yasa perish v'lepirushon means kolomar imlo pirishu b'shas misa. The way we initially translate it, imla doesn't mean if they said, but you don't believe them. It means if they never said. They never said at the time of their death who it belongs to. Yasa perish what you need to do is you need to do what they should have said, which is that it belongs to their husbands or the masters, and give it back to that person. However, the Rashbam does not like this pshat. He says veloni hira dimkein hainu reisha, because then it's really saying the same thing as the reisha. The reisha had said that when the woman dies, give it back to her husband. What are we adding now? That if she didn't say anything when she died, give it back to her husband. Of course. It's the same thing. Why would it need to say both of these things? And then the Rashbam has a third interpretation based on an alternate girsa, but let's leave that out for now. So what we have is, if the person dies at the time of their death, they say that it belongs to a third party, you give it to that third party. If, the way the Rashbam prefers to understand, you don't believe them that it belongs to the third party, then you give it back to the Bailim or to the Adon. Then the Gemara tells a story. The Bitu de Rabba Bar Bar Chana, the wife of Rabba Bar Bar Chana, Kika Shachva, Amra, Hani Kipi de Marta Ubine Barta. When she died, she had a certain pair of earrings, and she said that they belonged to Marta and Bnei Barta, the grandchildren of Marta. Asal Kame de Rav, so he came to Rav, he wanted to know, do I listen to her? Do I give this back to that third party who's unrelated to us? Amrlei imahem nalach ase kiperusha. If you believe her, so this is where the Rashbam got the idea that it all depends on whether you believe her, not whether she said or didn't say. If you believe her, do exactly what she said. V'ilo, and if you don't believe her, ase perush l'perusha. Then you need to make a perush l'perusha, which means you can assume that they do not belong to the person that she identified, and you can keep it yourself as the husband. V'ikada amri hachi amri, and some say no, the psak was as follows. I amidalach ase kiperusha, vilo ase perish leperusha. If it's amidalach, meaning the people that she is identifying as the owners of this jewelry are such wealthy people that they can afford to lend out expensive jewelry, so then you can trust her. Meaning he's not saying if you believe her, if you don't believe her. He's giving him an indication of whether to believe her or not. You want to know whether you should believe her? Let's just analyze how realistic it is. Are these people who can afford to give expensive jewelry as a pikadon? If so, then you should believe her. And that's one interpretation that Rashbam has in the first very wide line. The second very wide line, he says, Inami iamidlach ishtecha sheyesh la oavim shenosan lamamon amnashleilecha chelik bo umatanazut shenosan zukrov mishala asei kiperusha. The other possibility is, don't figure it out based on the wealth of the person who owns it, but based on the popularity of your own wife. That if she's a very popular person and people like her and people give her things, so then it's very likely that she's telling the truth. But if she's a less popular person, there's no reason to assume people will be giving her things, then don't trust that she's telling the truth. Mina katan yasala skula. So we had mentioned in passing that if you had taken the pikadon from a katan, you're not supposed to, because the katan might have stolen it from whoever it is that supports him, whoever it is that he stays at. However, if you did take it from the katan, you don't return it to him, because he cannot be trusted with the money. Rather, you make a skula. So my skula, what does it mean to make a skula for him? Rav Chisda Amar Sefer Torah, Rabba Rav Huna Amar Dikla Da'achl Minit Tamri. So Rav Chisda says, what you do is you use the money to buy a Sefer Torah, and Rabbi Baruch Huna says, no, not to buy a Sefer Torah, to buy a Dekel tree, which is Mechubel Karka. It's going to make Peros every year, so that will be something that he can't lose. He can't ruin it. You know, sometimes you don't trust a kid, he destroys everything. So you try to find the indestructible thing, the thing that cannot be lost, the thing that somehow will be attached to him. So the Dekel tree, that's your best bet. Nothing's going to happen to the Dekel tree. Now, the Ritva writes over here that it doesn't mean Dafka Sefer Torah. When we say that you buy a Sefer Torah, it could be any sort of Svarim. Those are going to be a great investment for him, because he'll be able to learn from them. However, the Chasam Sofer writes that no, it has to be a Sefer Torah, not other Svarim, because Svarim, there's a rule of Malam Mekodesh Vein Maridin, that you can trade Svarim in for something of higher level of Kedusha. So therefore, a Dekel is always going to be there. The Svarim are not always gonna be there. But a Sefer Torah, since everyone is chayiv to write a Sefer Torah, when the katan gets older, this is going to be something that will have fulfilled his chiyuv to write a Sefer Torah. So you are taking care of a responsibility that in the long run he's definitely going to have. So right now, by getting him this Sefer Torah, you're taking care of that responsibility, so it's taken care of regardless of whether he loses it or not. So you say other Svarim he might lose, but Sefer Torah, he's not. Even if he does lose, it doesn't make a difference, because he's still going to have fulfilled the mitzvah. So you have still made him a skula. You have still done something to his benefit by writing him a Sefer Torah. Now that is not pashut at all. That comment that a Sefer Torah, once it's written, don't worry, he's already fulfilled the mitzvah. First of all, you're writing it for him when he's a katan. So does that mean that he's ready to fulfill the mitzvah? What if it's lost before he's a gadol? So you're going to say that he's mekayim the mitzvah ready at that stage? And even if you wrote it for him when he's a gadol, there is a machlokas aposkim. If a person writes a Sefer Torah and then he gives it away, or he loses the Sefer Torah, has he been mekayim the mitzvah of ksiva Sefer Torah? Or is part of the mitzvah not just to write a Sefer Torah, but to maintain ownership of the Sefer Torah? And so long as you don't have it anymore, you have a chiyuv to write a new one. The Torah Schaim in his Chidushim to Masech Sanhedrin, Daf Chaf Avim Beis, writes that if a person wrote a Sefer Torah and then gave it to someone else, he lost the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, and therefore it's not a good idea to give away your Sefer Torah. However, many of the poskim hold that a person writes a Sefer Torah for himself to be Mekayim the mitzvah, even if he then loses it or gives it away, he's already been Mekayim the mitzvah. That's what the Karban Nesanel holds in his Sefer Torah Nesanel. And he said none of the poskim mentions this, and the minhag ha'olam, meaning none of the poskim mention this restriction that you're not allowed to give it away. The minhag ha'olam is that people do give it away. In the Tshuvas Mari Ashkenazi, he says even though the mitzvah of the melech is that he has to have a sefer Torah with him all the time, that's dafka din in a melech, but the mitzvah of ksiva sefer Torah that every Jew has is not to always have the sefer Torah with you; it's to write the sefer Torah. The Das Kedoshim adds that lechachila probably best not to be makdish the Sefer Torah to a shul, but to keep ownership of it. And if you give the Sefer Torah to the tzibur to read from, still you shouldn't be makne it to the shul, and that seems to be the practice nowadays, at least. Most of the time, people don't give the Sefer Torah to the shul, it's on loan to the shul, and that way they know that they're always in fulfillment of ksiva Sefer Torah. Some of the posts can even go so far as to say that even if you didn't make any condition, it's understood that you weren't really makne it to the shul, because you don't want to lose your mitzvah of ksiva sefer Torah. L'chora, this is talui a little bit, at least, on the Shitas HaRash in Maseches Menachos and Halachos Ketanos, where the Rash says that if a person is in fulfillment of the mitzvah ksiva sefer Torah b'zman hazeh, by writing svarim, by buying svarim rather, by purchasing svarim, because the whole point of ksiva sefer Torah is to learn from the sefer Torah. So nowadays, most of our learning doesn't come from a sefer Torah, most of our learning comes from svarim, so a person is in partial fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah by learning from the Torah. Well, if that's the case, if that's really the whole point of the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah, then l'chora, if you wrote a Sefer Torah and then gave it away, so now you don't have access to it anymore, or you lost it, so l'chora, that is not a fulfillment of the mitzvah of Ksiva Sefer Torah. L'chora, that discussion with the Ritva and the Chassam Sofer also very much is connected to that Shitas HaRash. Are you Yotze with other Svarim? Is that also a Segula, or is it only a Segula to write a Sefer Torah? Okay, says the Gemara further. V'lola av b'nichsei ben, v'lola ben b'nichsei av, midway through the page, nun beis amad aleph. We said that a father does not have a chazaka in his son's properties, nor does a son have a chazaka in his father's properties. Am Rav Yosef afilu chalku. Rav Yosef says this is true even if they went their separate ways, meaning even if the father is no longer supporting the son, still that by virtue of their family relationship, of their close family relationship, they don't have a chazaka in each other's properties, because we assume that they're a little more accepting of each other being in their property, living in their property, because it's a father-son. Rava amar chalku lo. Rava disagrees. Rava says no, once they've gone their separate ways, then they're just like any other two people that own separate properties, and they can develop a chazaka in each other's properties. I'm Rav Yirmi Midifti, Avad Rav Papi Uvda Chalku Lo Karava. Rav Papi did like Rava, where once they've gone their separate ways, they now are able to have a normal chazaka. Am Rav Nachum Bar Yitzchak Yishtayli Rav Chia Mehormiz Ardashid, that Rav Nachum Yitzchak says that Rav Chia Mehormiz Ardashid told me, Yishtayli Rav Acha Bar Yaakov, that Rav Acha Bar Yaakov told him, Mishmeid Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, that Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov told him, in the name of Rav Nachman Bar Yaakov, that Chalku Lo, that once they've gone their separate ways, then we're going to say like Rava, then they can develop a regular chazaka. And the halacha is that once they've gone their separate ways, once the son is no longer supported by the father, then they're just like two regular people that can each develop a chazaka in the other one's property. You don't have any of those limitations anymore of a normal father-son. Tani Nami Achi, Ben Shechalak, V'ishto Sheneskarsha, Harein Kishar Kalodam. And we have a brisa that says, Beferush, that a son that has separated from his father's care, and he's no longer taken care of by his father, or a married couple that gets divorced, now they're just like anybody else, they no longer have a chazaka, they now can have a chazaka, they're no longer limited from having a chazaka in each other's properties. Itmar. Let's say one of the brothers, you have a number of brothers who receive a Yerusha, so they all share the estate, and one of the brothers is in charge of the estate. One of the brothers is in charge of making the investments and taking care, hiring people to take care of the properties, etc. So he's the one that takes the lead. And there are all sorts of shtaros that come to light that have his name in them, that people owe him money, that people owe him karka, all sorts of deeds and shtaros that have his name. And he claims, yeah, this is a separate account. This is my personal property. These shtaros are about things that do not belong to the estate, that do not belong to us collectively, but belong to me personally. Where did I get it from? We all yarshin our father. I got it from my mother's side of the family, and apparently he doesn't share the same mother with the other brothers. So Amar Rav, a love raya. Rav says it's his job to bring a raya that's in fact true, that this is not part of the estate. The natural assumption is that it is part of the estate. Ushmuel Amar ala achna havi raya. Shmuel disagrees. Shmuel says that it's on the brothers to bring a raya that it is part of the estate. It has his personal name in it. Therefore, we assume that it's his personal property, that it does not belong to the estate. The reason for Shitas Rav, Tosos explains, is that he's also moda that when Onos and Shtaros are written by this brother's name, they're Becheskaso. They're certainly Becheskas him. They have his name on it, but there's a Reyusa, that if his money came from Beis Avi Imo, then there should have been Edim about that. So that's why a Lav Lahavi Raya, it's a Lav Lahavi Raya that these actually belong to him from the other side of the family, because if in fact there is money that came from the other side of the family, it shouldn't be so hard for him to have a raya. He should be able to produce edim to that effect. And that's what several other Rishonim write, and they add that it's a chumra bi'alma, that the Rachman or Machmir, that he's got to bring a raya be'edim. The Ritva just adds that if he doesn't bring a raya, he's considered negligent, and we say, he's the one that caused himself to lose out. It's his problem if he wasn't careful enough to make sure that there are going to be edim. Now, what sort of raya does he have to bring in order to believe him that all of this property that he has written up in these shtaros belong to him personally? So it's a machlokas rishonim achronim, exactly what kind of raya he has to bring. The Sefer HaTrumas, the Rashba, several rishonim quote a shita that if he just brings a raya that there's any sort of money that he got as a matano or that came from Beis Avi Imo, he doesn't have to bring a raya that every single shtar, you know, all of the properties identified in the shtar, all of the exact amounts of money that are identified in the shtar, each belong to him. That he doesn't have to go that far. He just has to bring a raya that there is a separate account. Once he brings a raya that there's a separate account that's personal to him, that doesn't belong to the estate, then in terms of the details of that account, we'll trust all of these shtaros to belong to that account. But he doesn't have to itemize exactly and bring a raya on every last detail. Rabbeinu Chananel writes that he has to bring a raya that he actually has the amount of money that it actually says in the shtar, that it has to be a much, much more thorough raya. In the Agos Maimonios, quotes from the Rav Yah, he has to bring a raya not just that amount of money, but that money itself, that the money in the shtar, that this shtar is dafka written for that money that he got, mi beis avi imas, even more strict. The Ritva says, no, it all depends on what Bezin's assessment is. That Bezin has to look and see if this is realistic. Meaning, what, he's going to bring a raya that his maternal grandfather once gave him $5 for his birthday, and now there are shtaros that say that people owe him millions of dollars, and he's going to say, oh yeah, that was from the investment of the $5 from my maternal... You know, Bezin has to figure it out. Bezin has to figure out if it makes sense, if it adds up. But there is no specific rule as to exactly what he has to bring a raya for. But anyway, so we have this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel, whose job it is to bring a raya. Do we naturally assume that it belongs to him and it's the other brother's job to bring a raya that it doesn't? Or do we naturally assume that it doesn't belong to him and it's his job to bring a raya that it does? The Yad Ramah gives a list. The Gemara is going to give a list of two possible cases where even Rav would say that the other brothers need to bring a raya. The Yad Ramah sort of goes in the other direction, and he gives cases where Shmuel would agree to Rav that it's this brother's job to bring a raya. The Yad Ramah says, let's say it becomes clear to us that he didn't get any Yerusha from Beis Avi Imo. So since his taina is hukchash, we have a direct contradiction to his taina, then even Shmuel would be moda that the other brothers no longer have to bring a raya. And he comes up with a bunch of other cases. Some where Rav is moda, some where Shmuel is moda. The Yad Ramah has like five or six different cases where this machlokas will not apply. But let's see what the Gemara says, the cases the Gemara has where this machlokas may not apply. First wide line, Nun Bezom and Aleph. Amar Shmuel, modeli Abba, Shmuel says, you should know that Rav agrees to me, She'imeis ala achnavi raya, that if the guy dies, the guy who was in charge of the estate and had all these shtaros in his name, so he's not going to be able to bring a raya because he's dead, so now the burden of proof shifts onto the other brothers. They have to prove that it did not belong to him. Why is Rav called Abba? So Rashbam points out, Abba Rav Kacho Yishmo. That was actually Rav's real name. Kedekari le b'shchita schulin, Abba Aricha. Amrin man reish sidra bavel, Abba Aricha. Amrin mesach snida, Rav Oruch Bedoro haya. He was sometimes called Abba Aricha because he was the Oruch Bedoro. V'aydekari le Rav, k'mosh kol Rabbi Dan Nasi, Rabbi Beritzol, kor le nam bavel, Rav. V'chem etzasi b'sefer Oruch amu b'meroma. He says, throughout Shas, we always call him Rav. You should realize that's like we call Rabbi Dan Nasi Rebbe. That's, they call Rav Salvechik the Rav, or the Brisker Rav the Rav. That's the kind of term of respect that it is, but it's not his actual name. No one names their kid Rav, right? His actual name was Abba, which is also a title very often in the Gemara. You have very often, you know, you never have people with two names in the Gemara unless the first name is Abba or Mar or something like that. Mm-hmm. So Mar Ukva, you know, something like that, because those are names that often connote just you know, as a sign of respect, and they're not actual names. But over here, by Rav, who's actually Abba was his actual name, Rav was the word that we use to show respect for him. Okay, Mask of Rav Papa. So Rav Papa asks on Shmuel, you mean to tell me that just because the guy dies, now the other brothers are charged with bringing a raya? We're going to make a tainer for the Yisomim that their father would not have made the tainer for the father, where the father could not have made the tainer, meaning the father's not going to be believed to say it's mine, now you guys bring a raya. So why should the Yisomim be believed to say it belonged to our father, now you guys bring a raya? Why would we make a tainer for the Yisomim when we couldn't for the father? Varava Apik Zuga de Sarbla Vesifra de Agadta Miasme, below Raya, Rava one time confiscated scissors and a sefer of Agadta from Yisomim without any Raya, Bidvarma Suyim Lahashi Lahaskir. And these were items that were typically lent out, that were typically borrowed and rented. Kiddushalach Rafuna Baravin, Dvarma Suyim Lahashi Lahaskir, Varma Lukuklein Biadi, Einon Eman. Like Shmuel said, that people are not believed about Dvarma Suyim Lahashi Lahaskir, about things that are typically rented out and loaned. But bottom line is, what you see from that story is that the reason that you're not believed to say lekuchim biyadi is because we assume that they were just given over as a loan or as a rental, and they don't actually belong to you. So even on these misparayim, these scissors and these svarim, even though the Yisomim got them, we don't make a taina on behalf of the Yisomim that they were purchased by the Yisomim, because their father would not have been able to make a taina unless he had an actual raya. So the Yisomim can't make a taina without an actual raya that these svarim or these scissors belong to them. So why does Shmuel say that even Rav would be moda, that if the Nechasim go to the Yisomim because the father died, now all of a sudden they can make a taina that the other brothers have to bring a raya, that the father's brothers have to bring a raya, even though when the father was alive it would have been his job to bring the raya? So it says Gemara Kasha, that's in fact very difficult. Why does Shmuel think that Rav would be moda when the fellow dies? That we don't know. The Gemara leaves that unresolved, leaves it as a kasha. But it's interesting, the Gemara does not leave it as a tiyufta, leaves it as a kasha. So if you look in the Rashbam, kasha lidan kasha mayam Rishon mod liyaba, upasuk Rabbeinu Chananel dilchsa kishmuel, deich demis ala ach nahavi raya, that the Rabbeinu Chananel paskins like Shmuel, even though we leave it off as a kasha and Shmuel. V'chein pirish naktina mirabos is al kol heicha damar b'gemar tiyufta, diploni tiyufta, batu divrei mi sha tiyufta alav legamri. This is the famous Rashbam, where the Rashbam tells us a rule in Shas. Whenever we say tiyufta, diploni tiyufta, that means that the person's shita is entirely rejected. But when it just leaves it off as a kasha, like we do over here, it's not being mevatel what he said entirely. Kasha means, you know, it's the kind of kasha you don't die from a kasha, where you assume, yeah, there must be some yishuv, we just can't think of it right now. It's only when there's a double tiyufta where we're confident that we thought of every single angle and there's no way to resolve it. Nevertheless, as Rashbam, I still don't like the idea that we're passing like Shmuel over here. He says, I'm not sure about this difference between tiyufta and kasha. There may be a different explanation of why we sometimes use tiyufta and sometimes kasha. Maybe tiyufta is when we have a direct question from a mishnah or a brisa, and kasha is where it's from other amoraim. And therefore, I don't think we should rely on Shmuel over here. So Rashbam says, as a matter of halacha, I disagree with Rabbeinu Chananel over here. I don't think that we should paskin
like Shmuel, because we do leave it as a kasha on Shmuel. But that first interpretation of the Rashbam is what's become fairly well known, that when you learn a sugi and shas and you see a double tiyufta, then you know that that's a checkmate, that there's no way we're going to pass like that. You see a kasha, so it's still somewhat open. We still have to, that's why throughout shas you always have Rishonim, Achronim trying to come up with answers to the kasha. Chutzpah, they're going to come up with answers. The Amoraim couldn't come up with answers, so it's not that the Amoraim couldn't, it's that they didn't. So kasha means that when we have time to think about it some more, we'll come up with something. So in later generations, we filled in the blanks and they tried to come up with answers to things that we left off as kasha. Amr of Chista, lo shanu ela de'in chalukin bi'isasan. Aval chalukin bi'isasan, emer me'isaso kimeitz. Now this whole idea that we assume automatically that it belongs to the whole estate and that it doesn't belong to this brother personally, that's only when the estate is mamish kept through and through as communal property. But if they divide up, let's say, food, even if it's just the food, that they divide up and say, okay, this food is your portion, this is your portion, and each of the brothers receives their own portion, so that immediately creates the possibility of personal wealth for one of them. Because one of them may have taken his portion and may have been mekametz me'isaso. He went on a diet, he didn't eat all the food that he was given, he invested some of it, he sold some of it, and that's how maybe he amassed a sense of a certain amount of personal wealth, and he was and that's where all these shtaros are coming from. So that's what we have the right to assume. They me'isaso kimeitz. Fractosos, but that's not what he claimed. He claimed that he got it from his grandmother, from his grandfather on his mother's side. So what we're going to make the assumption that because they divide up the food, that's where his wealth came from. It's not what he's saying. So Tos says, yeah, but he has a migo now. Migo that he could have said that all this wealth came from the isa that he got from his portion of dough that he was that he saved up from his meager savings. So we're going to believe him to say that it came from Beis Avi Ima. Says Gemara Raya B'mai. What exactly, in Rav's case, that we paskin like Rav, Rashbam writes, that he has to bring a Raya. What kind of Raya does he have to bring that it came from his grandfather's estate, from his mother's father's estate? Rabba Amar Raya B'edim. He needs Edim. Rav Sheshes Amar Raya B'kiyum Hashtar. All he needs to do is show that this shtar that has his name on it was Mekuyim in Beis Din. Because if the shtar is Mekuyim in Beis Din, what they're going to be Mekayim is that they're going to cover every detail of the shtar, including the fact that it's written to his personal name and not to the entire estate. So once it has a kiyum in Beis Din, we know that this is his personal shtar and it's not about the estate in general. Amalei Rav L'Rav Nachman, HaRav VaHashmuel. Okay, we saw this machlokas between Rav and Shmuel about who the burden of proof is on. HaRabba VaHaRav Sheshes. We saw this further machlokas within Rav, that assuming the burden of proof is on this fellow, exactly what kind of proof he has to bring. Mar Keman Sfirilei. What about you, Rav Nachman? What do you hold? Samlei Anamas Nisi Yadani. He says, all I know is a braisa. Titania Echad Min HaAchad Shoyinosim V'Nosei Shoyinosim V'Nosei B'Zoch HaBayis V'Yonos V'Shoros Yotzen Al Shmo. The Brisa says our exact case, va'amar shaliyein, and this brother claims that these are personal shtaros shenaflim besavi ima that relate to properties that I got from my maternal grandfather. A love lahavi raya. It's on him to bring the raya. V'cheni isha shinosis v'naselnes besoch habayis v'yonos shtaros yotzen al shema. Or and the same is true also by a woman who's in charge of the estate of Yisomim, and there are shtaros written by her name. Va'arma, and she claims, yeah, those shtaros are a separate cheshbin, shalihein, shenafalim, beis avi abo, beis avi ima, that I got from my grandfather, aleh Allah avi raya, then it's her job to bring a raya. My v'chein, what are we adding by the case of the isha? It's the same exact case. They have someone who's in charge of an estate that's somewhat communal, and because they're in charge, there are a lot of shtaros that go out on their name, that they're going to have to bring a raya, that those shtaros are separate. So why is it different if it's an isha, or it's one of the brothers? No, ma'ad detema isha kivin de Shvicha la milsa da amri katarcha kameyasme lo gazla meyasme kamash milan. I might have thought that the woman would be so honored that she is entrusted with the property of the Yisomim to be Tarech and the property of the Yisomim, that she would never steal from the Yisomim, and therefore you could automatically believe her, Kamashmulan, that she still has to bring a Raya. We said that when you're giving a Matana, when brothers are dividing an estate, they need to do what's called a Kinyan Chazaka. So it says, when all the properties we've been talking about until now are not subject to Chazaka, and all of these cases are not subject to Cheskas Gimel Shanim. So says Mar, no, what we're doing is we're shifting from a discussion of Cheskas Gimel Shanim to how to make a Kinyan. Up until now, we've been trying to say that when you want to prove ownership by virtue of the fact that you've been living in a field for a certain amount of time, that's when you need 3 years in a taina. There's a dispute whether you're actually the owner of the property or not. Where it's not about machlokas, did I sell it to you, did I not sell it to you? It's just a question of when have you formally made the kinyan? At what point does it actually formally become yours? Is the kinyan actually chal? So no'al gadol parts kolshu harezu chazaka. The way to make a kinyan actually be chal is by being null, gadol parts kolshu, by doing something in the field, and that just takes a moment. That doesn't take 3 years. A different type of chazaka. Okay, Be'ez Hashem, tomorrow we'll pick up with Tani Rav Hoshea.